Off the coast of Greece today, at least 7 migrants died and more than 30 are still missing after their boat capsized in stormy weather. The Greek Coast Guard and local fishermen were able to rescue more than 240 other refugees and migrants trying to make their way across the Aegean Sea from Turkey to Greece. In just the last 2 days, nearly 1,000 people have been rescued along that route, and another 1,000 or more have been rescued over in the Mediterranean, trying to make their way from Libya to Italy. The stakes are high, as we'll hear from Sebastian Stein, an emergency coordinator with MSF, Doctors Without Borders. He's currently on one of the group's hired search and rescue boats, the Bourbon Argos, looking for refugees and migrants in the Mediterranean. We spoke yesterday by satellite phone from the boat.
Right now we're out at sea, just north of Tripoli in Libya. We're in international waters around 30 nautical miles north of the Libyan coast.
And we know you guys have been very vocal about the fact that the attention seems to have turned to refugees and migrants making their way by foot across part of the continent. But you've wanted to remind people are still making this treacherous crossing?
Indeed, people are making treacherous crossings across the central Mediterranean on very unseaworthy boats, rubber dinghies that are prone to sinking in the continuously deteriorating weather that we are seeing now in the wintertime. People are taking incredible risks in crossing the Mediterranean, and it is shocking to see how people are forced into taking such a journey because there is no safe and legal access to get into Europe to apply for asylum.
Yeah. Well, you guys tweeted out, by the way, your handle is at MSF_C, and one of the tweets said, ignoring those in need on the central Med won't make them go away. So how does it work? I mean, do you just approach any boat you see? Someone alerts you that the boats are coming? How does it work?
Well, it's surprisingly organized how the smugglers work. They equip the people who they place on these boats. They equip them with a cheap satellite phone and give them the number of the rescue coordination center in Rome, in Italy. These boats leave in the middle of the night in the darkness. A few hours before sunrise, the people will call in and report in their GPS coordinates. And then we will be called up by the rescue coordination center in Rome and told to go to these coordinates and start searching for boats.
Well, you know what people say, first of all. There are critics who say, as long as you have this well-oiled system, rescue system, it's aiding and abetting the smugglers. If people didn't think they were going to get rescued, they would not try to make these treacherous crossings and lives would be saved.
Well, I think there are two important things to remember about that. First is that even before there was a big rescue operation a couple of years ago, people were crossing. So this pull factor that the rescue operation is creating, I think you can rationalize around it, but it's just not true. Previously, people were crossing without these rescue operations. And then secondly, even if it was true, what does that mean? Should we just stop doing rescues and the people drown at sea? I mean, we cannot lean back and say, yeah, we have to have a few thousand casualties at sea, and that's okay, because then you'll learn. No, that's not the reality. People are fleeing from terror and war in their countries, from in Eritrea with an oppressive regime, or from North Nigeria, where they are being terrorized by groups like Boko Haram. And people will continue to flee. And as long as people need to flee, they will try to find a way. And as long as there is a business model to take people across the Mediterranean, there will be smugglers who do it. So we have to rescue people at sea.
Well, tell us more about the people you're meeting. You have a small makeshift hospital on board, by the way. You have a small crew. It's a merchant ship. So you come across these boats, whether it's a dinghy or a wooden fishing boat, you know, boats that sometimes have holds. People are crammed down in the holds. What happens when you first pull up alongside them? Because I'm imagining that these people, these migrants, would be so happy to see you, they might just storm your boat.
That's right. I mean, one of the key moments during the actual rescue is the first point of contact. And we've developed a model where we have a cultural mediator and interpreter. We have people who speak Tigrinya, the language of Eritreans, and we have Arabic and French and English, of course, also. And we go first out on our small boat. We go out to approach these people who are in their distressed boat, and we start speaking to them. And the first thing we have to explain is that we are indeed going to rescue them and take them to Italy, because they are so scared that we might be representing some kind of Libyan armed group or something and take them back to Libya. So we have to diffuse this fear. And then we take good time to explain the whole process, that we need them to cooperate and be calm and come on in a controlled manner. And we spend quite some time doing this, just to diffuse this the risk that people will storm the boat. This is very crucial.
Yeah. Well, and what are you seeing? We know there's men, women, children. Can you describe some of the, you know, how, this wave of humanity that you're seeing?
Yeah, and you know, this is in a way both the saddest thing about it, but also in a way the most humbling thing about it, is that there's all kinds of people coming, all kinds of stories, all kinds of backgrounds. Women, children, young men, people from all walks of life. We've had rich people who come with computers and bags full of money, and we have filthy poor people. There's all sorts of people coming. And I think what strikes me the most is how the sea is a big equalizer in this. On the sea, everyone is the same. There is no difference between anyone. And you may drown just as easily if you are coming from a wealthy background or if you come from a poor background.
And just so people understand the scale, when you rescue, how many do you have on your ship at one time?
Well, it can vary. I mean, like the smaller boats, a small rubber boat, it's a small boat, but it still carries up to 140 people. So in a day, we can rescue, let's say, one of those, or we can rescue several of those and up to one of the biggest wooden shipping boats we have, which can take up to 700 people. The biggest rescue we did in one day was 1,001 individuals. And at that moment, our ship is completely overcrowded. You can find people everywhere. And it's difficult to deal with, but as long as we treat people with respect and set some well-grounded parameters, it is surprisingly easy, given the scale of this. I'm very grateful to be able to do this job. It really feels worthwhile when we can create this space of for people to feel like human being again.
In fact, I read it in one place, someone said to you or said to the boat personnel, the minute you picked us up, we went from animals to human beings. What is it like, just that moment when they realize they're being rescued?
You know, this is, for me, the most extraordinary moment of all. It's when people come on board, when they realize that they're no longer going to drown. You will see all sorts of emotions. You'll see people laughing, crying, falling down of exhaustion. You'll see people start praying, dancing, crying. Everything is there. And it's really a humbling experience, because you see the whole of the human emotional specter. It is really an extraordinary moment.
We should say, don't many of them, though, then now have to walk across, you know, maybe even Italy or Austria to get to Germany or elsewhere?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You're absolutely right. And that's, for us, one of the most difficult and contradictory moments, I would say, because when we land in Italy and we disembark the people we have met, our new friends, as we call them, it is with relief that they have been rescued from drowning at sea, but it is also with some kind of mixed emotions about what they will have to go through and their uncertain future in Europe. They have fled from terror and war, from abuse, and they have spent fortunes doing that, and often their life savings. And they have taken tremendous amounts of risk. And often the realities that they face in Europe is much more challenging than what they were hoping for, I think. So it's a difficult moment for us. But sometimes we have stories coming back to us that people have made it, and that they're on their way to a safer environment, and that makes us very happy, of course.
Sebastian Stein, emergency coordinator with Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, on one of their rescue boats in the Mediterranean, the Bourbon Argos. Sebastian, thanks so much.
It's been my pleasure.
And we spoke with Sebastian yesterday.